Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. So join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjock.com. With that, I'm Rob Hernandez, joined by Gary D'Amato. It's our annual Friday happy hour, we like to call Talking.Golf. And Gary D'Amato, it's been a fun week as we kind of somewhat wind down the golf season, but yet rev up towards the Ryder Cup. We'll obviously get to that towards the end of our podcast here with the Ryder Cup report. Talk a little bit about the big news of the day with Bryson DeChambeau shooting a 60. In the PGA Tour playoffs at the BMW Championships out in Maryland. But let's start first with a different kind of Ryder Cup report. I got to see the Ryder Cup captain this last weekend in a much different role out in, I guess it's technically Rancho Mirage, California, Palm Springs. Steve Stricker caddying for his daughter, Bobby, at the LPGA Tour, Symetra Tour qualifying. Bobby makes it to Sunday, but then struggles to a 79, and that's where her Q school ends. Tess Hackworthy, her former Badger teammate, on to stage two with really four solid rounds out in the desert. But let's start first with Bobby Stricker. First of all, fun to see Dad on the bag and fun to see him in a different role where the pressure is very different when you're a dad watching your daughter play, especially when you're trying to help her advance in her career in golf. That was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, you and I have both gotten to see Steve on the bag this year, Rob, because earlier this summer, he was caddying for Izzy in this Women's State Amateur, a tournament that Bobby won, just playing just ahead of or behind Izzy. So, it is cool to see Steve in that role. Obviously, you know, we've talked about it so many times, just a terrific family guy. That family is very, very close, him and Nikki and the two girls. And it took his mind off the Ryder Cup for a little while, which is probably a good thing.
Probably a good thing, right? And maybe you saw it when he was caddying at the state amateur this summer, you know, it kind of put him in a position where you don't have control over what you're watching. That was certainly the case in, round number four out at the Dinah Shore course at Mission Hills Country Club, Mission Hills Country Club in near Palm Springs. You know, early in the round had a good lie in the bunker, but, you know, admittedly, Bobby Stricker, not the best bunker player yet, you know, 4 years into really her competitive golf career, and just kind of thin one out of the bunker, didn't really scull it, just kind of, it was not quite the chunk and run she needed. It was a little bit not enough chunk, and it ran too far and went in the water. And, you know, and Steve rolls his eyes and he said afterwards, you know, she's got to improve that. But boy, what a helpless feeling when you're, you know, watching that. And, you know, at that point, she was still, you know, in that, in the running to get onto stage two. And that'll be what he's got to be up against at Whistling Straits, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've noticed when I've seen Steve on the bag or, you know, around his daughters that he really says very little to them on the course. I'm sure that there's a post round, you know, discussion about when right and what went wrong, but he lets them play, which I think is a good thing. He's not constantly in their ear. I don't know if you saw that in Rancho Mirage with Bobby, but he pretty much lets them play. And I think there's probably a dissertation after the round about what they can improve on, what they did right and what they did wrong.
And I it's funny you bring that up because I talked to Tess Hackworthy about that, because Tess was right on that bubble of getting to stage two or not, going down to the final hole on day four. And she found herself in between two palm trees. And, you know, most of the time, a palm tree is not going to impede your ability to execute the golf shot. But this time, she had a tree in the way on her follow through, and her dad, knowing that she needed to make par to advance, she advanced pretty much right on the number, I believe, at that point, and wanted to make sure that she took a good enough swing to get that ball advanced to where she could have a decent iron into the green on the par five. And Tess was worried about, about the tree getting in the way. So there was a lot of dialogue about where she needed to be to have that comfortable shot. And she said that when the Strickers and the Hackworthys had dinner early in the week, the two golfers agreed that less information is better. So to that degree, point, I think Steve did a pretty good job of keeping it simple during the round, and then, did break it down. It was quite frank after the round, and Bobby likes hearing honesty. And I think that's what's going to carry Bobby Stricker forward in her golf career, is the fact that, she doesn't have to be handled gently. She can handle the truth, and she knows what she has to work on. And that's kind of the point of playing in this. And I think that's what she got out of it. And so I thought it was a good pairing that way, in terms of father and daughter on that bag. And then, Tess Hackworthy, now a couple of years into her professional career, is kind of where Bobby is where Tess was a couple of years ago. And you can see what 2 years of playing nothing but golf has done to help Tess Hackworthy. So she and her dad agreed on, a good enough swing to get out from that predicament, stay short of the fairway bunker, through the fairway. And then she hits a great, I think it was a five iron from 180 into this, into the green that everyone watches on the ANA Inspiration. And then overruled dad and chipped it down to about a foot and made the putt for par, and off she goes to the second stage. So she's got a confidence about her to be able to, maybe speak up more than maybe Bobby is right now. But it's really fun. We don't get a chance to, when we're only following two golfers in a tournament, or three golfers in a tournament, because Emily Lauterbach of the Badgers was also in this thing. We don't get a chance to see that, the depth of those conversations. And that was fun to watch in this situation.
Yeah. And I noticed that, Rob, Tess has played better and better on the Symetra Tour. She hasn't played a lot on the Symetra Tour over the last year and a half. Of course, there wasn't much last year with COVID, but in recent tournaments, she's played better and starting to make cuts and starting to win some money, which is, it's not a lot on the Symetra Tour, but just cashing a paycheck, I think, at this point is probably a big, pretty big deal to her.
It sure is. And she shot 3 over 75 in the final round last weekend on the Dinah Shore course. Until that point, I think her dad said in her previous 10 rounds combined, she was an aggregate even par, which is a huge, huge advancement in her career. And then if you compare where Tess Hackworthy is right now to where some of the Wisconsin golfers who have tried this before, save Casey Danielson, who's, always been kind of, someone that's been able to handle, whether it's, stage one of LPGA Tour qualifying school. Obviously, Casey Danielson medaled at the European Tour, ladies European Tour qualifying school right when she turned pro out of Stanford, and now is playing quite well in the Symetra. But Tess is, in a great position, and is really has a very relaxed attitude about her on the golf course. Is able to, talk to you maybe in between a couple holes and just sort of chat a little bit, and then lock it back in when she has to execute the shots. And between Bobby and Tess, I saw a lot of fairways hit. I saw a lot of greens hit. The last day at the Dinah Shore course, Bobby Stricker hit two of the best approach shots I've seen anybody hit all year into greens on one and two, and just didn't make the putts. And of course, the grain out here in the greens in the desert's a little bit different than our bent grass greens back home. But I thought again, she attacked the situation, and that was pretty cool. So right now, Gary, what happens is Tess Hackworthy on to stage two of LPGA Tour qualifying school. She will have, very solid Symetra status now for 2022. Bobby Stricker will have conditional status, but we talked, and we'll have a little bit more about it in the sweet spot on Monday. Her uncle Mario Tiziani, who represents Steve Stricker and presumably will represent Bobby Stricker when she turns professional. Already, thinking about, the sponsor's exemption route on getting Bobby some starts on the Symetra Tour. You and I had talked about that even before this process started. When you have that last name Stricker, it usually opens some doors, and I think it will for Bobby. And she talks about the tournament you covered, I think, you know, a couple of years ago when she qualified for the Symetra event in Milwaukee by winning the Brown Deer Women's Amateur. And what an impactful moment that was. She can't wait to get back out there. So I think she's going to work hard on her game. And then, you know, obviously she'll have some opportunities to play. But you saw her play a couple of years ago. Even with less experience than she has now, and she handled that situation pretty well too in Milwaukee.
Yeah, she certainly did. She played well in that tournament in the Brown Deer Women's Amateur. Rob, just a bit ago, you mentioned Casey Danielson, and it made me think, wait a second, there's a Symetra Tour event going on this week. So I just called it up, the Circling Raven Championship in Worley, Idaho. And Casey is T59 after the first round, or with most of the first round completed, shot even par 72, and she's fighting to get that full exempt status on the LPGA Tour, and is very close to locking that up. So that'll be another player we'll have to watch her this weekend, Rob.
That's a good point too. And 95 in ties went from stage one to stage two, which I thought was a little bit of a hefty number, but it turns out the same number as previously. They were talking about top 60. You know, with COVID and everything, it's kind of hard to figure out who's actually going to be exempt on the LPGA Tour and what that means for golfers coming back. But it's great to see Casey get that chance to move on. And now a couple, you know, two right now. And then, you know, Emily Lauterbach used the LPGA Q School as to fill a gap in the schedule before the start of the college season. And we'll talk some college golf here shortly. She, you know, she's only going to be a junior at UW. So that's as young as I've seen anybody try to qualify out of Wisconsin for the LPGA Tour. And this would have just been simply to, earn herself some status and some opportunities going forward. This is not, you know, make or break, life or death. So she played her three rounds, got her conditional status, and then cheered Tess and Bobby on from afar on Sunday. Corn Ferry Tour qualifying going on this week. It is the pre-qualifying. And so, in other words, anybody who's never made it out of pre-qualifying previously or is just getting their feet wet in professional golf has to go through this stage. And four golfers from Wisconsin fit that bill, and one of them got through today. Thomas Long Bella, the 2020 state amateur champion from Chippewa Falls, shoots a 4-under par 68 actually 4-under par in his final nine holes in Madison, Mississippi, to just get inside the cut line and advance to stage one. He got off to a slow start in the 54-hole event on Thursday and rallied here over the last 2 days, so he gets through. Obviously, Gary, the University of Minnesota has a pretty good history for turning out golfers on the pro circuits. Most recently, Eric Van Rooyen, who's making a name for himself in these PGA Tour playoffs with Alex Gaugert on the bag, but you go back to Tom Lehman, and I know that Thomas Long Bella has shown us he can take it low. Consistency is the key with Thomas Long Bella.
Yeah, it is. We saw what he can do at the state amateur last year at Milwaukee Country Club when he blitzed the field, won by 10 shots. Thomas definitely has all the tools. You know, he's definitely long enough. I mean, he moves it out there well past 300 whenever he wants to. But you're right, he's got to turn those 73s and 4s into 71s consistently as all those guys do who are trying to get there.
And by the way, that we are in the What's Up segment of Talking.Golf powered by our Instagram page at Wis.Golf. Megan Augustine has been posting a lot of stuff this week off of a lot of our features that we've done this week. And then going back to the LPGA Tour qualifying over the weekend, which really got a lot of eyeballs. So we thank Megan for her efforts and again, encourage you to keep your eyes peeled to our Instagram account, especially next week. We've got a neat event out at Maple Bluff Country Club that I believe Jim Kelsch will be at with photos. It's a cancer fundraiser where everybody's dressed in pink. So you might see a little bit of pink on our Instagram account next week. And again, that's at Wis.Golf. Three other golfers failed to qualify. Austin Kanzorski, the former Marquette golfer from Sussex, missed by a couple shots in Mississippi in the same qualifier as Thomas Long Bella. And then Madison's Blake Jens and a guy from Burlington named Tony Romo missed in Argyle, Texas. And so they will not be going on. The Tony Romo trying to qualify, I think, gives a lot of maybe his critics some ammo. You know, he's accepted a lot of Korn Ferry sponsors exemptions to draw some attention to tournaments. And I credit Tony for going out and trying to qualify. I mean, he shoots 78, 73, 74. For those of us who have followed him, it's progress. I'm not sure those that don't really follow him tournament to tournament and you know, whether it be the Ray Fisher where he was in the lead going into the final round, or whether it's his time on the Korn Ferry Tour. But I mean, Tony Romo has nothing to be ashamed of. That's not bad for your first try through Q School. It's 61 out of 75 places. He finishes 61st. So, you know, he's a ways away, but you know, hats off to him for having the courage to tee it up.
Yeah, Rob, it's not his fault that he gets opportunities and takes advantage of them. I think everybody would in that situation. In his heart, he's very much still a competitor. He doesn't have football anymore to compete in, and he wants to compete in golf, and he's making strides. A lot of critics have pointed to all the times he's entered these tournaments and not made cuts or not qualified for the U.S. Open. He's tried that a bunch of times. But, hey, I mean, he's willing to put himself out there. He knows he's going to get criticized a little bit, but he's willing to put himself out there and try. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Three more golfers from Wisconsin are scheduled to compete in pre-qualifying next week. Kaylor Steeger out of Mount Pleasant will be teeing it up in North Carolina. Zach Gaugert out of Wanakee will be out in La Quinta, California. And Taylor Kozer out of Bryce Lake will be in Alabama. Again, that's just pre-qualifying to get in the first of three stages of Korn Ferry Tour qualifying, which begins in mid to late September. Also going on this week around the country, we've got the Colorado Opens are some of the greatest opens for the fledgling and sometimes, you know, golfer, any golfer that doesn't have status on one of the major tours. We've seen it with the Women's Colorado Open, the Men's Colorado Open, and now with the Senior Open, Skip Kendall, who doesn't have status on the PGA Tour Champions, but has played a little bit more this summer than he did last. He finishes T2 today out there in Denver, Colorado, and the Cobank Colorado Senior Open. And he shoots 67, 69, 70, and finishes four shots behind Harry Rudolph of La Jolla, California, and is able to pocket a pretty good chunk of change. In fact, let's take a look at that. Let's see here.
6,200.
6,200. I was wondering about that. So, I mean, that's not bad, is it, there for a state open?
You know, it's really interesting. You know, we talked to Skip about a year and a half ago, and he was totally burned out on competitive golf. But he has found a new second wind here, or a third wind, given his age. He's not a young man anymore, but he wants to play, and he's playing better. And to finish second, it's a pretty good field. Jerry Smith tying for second. We've seen that name a bunch. There's some names, Gary Hallberg tying for 13th, Craig Canada. There's some pretty good names in this in tournament. So, you know, hats off to Skip for getting back into it and for playing well again.
You go all the way down to T29. There's Bob May, who lost in a playoff to Tiger Woods at the PGA at Valhalla. And, anybody who's watched Monday qualifiers for the PGA Tour Champions, some of the great names, some of the names in those fields are as great as the ones that are in the main draw. And this type of event is indicative of that. Then, of course, this week on the PGA Tour Champions, they're over at Warwick Hills Golf and Country Club in Grand Blanc, Michigan, the former home of the PGA Tour's Buick Open. It's now the Ally Challenge, and Jerry Kelly in the field. They were delayed by rain today, a lot of rain too, by the looks of things on the telecast. And so they're just getting going out there in Michigan. That is what's up for this week here on Talking.Golf. What's up, powered by our Instagram page at wis.golf. Make sure you go there and see where we're at here, as the especially here in the run-up to the Ryder Cup and at the Ryder Cup. It's going to be a place that we will visually share with you our whereabouts as we go from tournament to tournament. We are sponsored here on Talking.Golf by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel, and the technology kills 99.9% of bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat. In other words, if you're hanging around by Gary D'Amato and myself, you don't smell quite as bad after a round of golf, and you can enjoy that same kind of comfort and performance. Go to ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com for more. Time now for what's next here on Talking.Golf. What's next, powered by atwist.golf live, our Twitter feed for all the results. We've had a busy week of high school golf, including a great round of 66 from Kylie Walker of Westosha Central in one of the big tournaments earlier this week down in Southeast Wisconsin. But all the high school results, all the Q school results, all the PGA Tour Champions results, and more can be found at wis.golf live on our Twitter handle. We'll start to have some more college results. Actually, we had a college result last weekend from Madison College. They opened the season down at the tournament in Northern Illinois, but most of college golf gets going next week. We'll get to that in a second, but it's a big anniversary, Gary D'Amato. I know you have a column coming up here over the weekend, 25 years since Tiger Woods said, "Hello world" at Brown Deer Park Golf Course in Milwaukee. We were both there. It does not seem to me like it was 25 years ago.
Rob, I just, someone just sent me a photo, and it's a photo of Tiger taken from above with about 40 reporters in a circle around him. And you, my friend, are right. You've seen that photo before, haven't you? You're right behind him.
I've seen it in a lot of different forms. They've got one at one point over the life of that photo that it was all black and white, and everybody except Tiger was whited out, but I was wearing a black shirt. So I had it here as black. And it's been hard to get away from that photo, but it was, as you and I look back on our careers covering golf in Wisconsin, that was a watershed moment in for golf in the state, for the Greater Milwaukee Open, all the great people that ran that tournament, in relative anonymity to that point, when Tiger shows up off the plane after winning his third U.S. Amateur, and it was time for him to unleash his talents to the professional golf scene, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I think the biggest moment in GMO history before that was probably Greg Norman winning, I think in 89, yeah. Which was a big deal because Norman was sort of at the height of the peak of his prowess and powers at that point. But yeah, no doubt it was eclipsed by Tiger turning professional. I talked to Tom Strong earlier today, our old friend, Rob, who was tournament director back then and went on to work first in Akron, Ohio at the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, and then took a job with the tour and just retired, Rob, actually left the tour. And now it has a consulting business living in Appleton. But Tom said that they had an additional $400,000 in ticket revenue that week. Just because Tiger was there. That's a lot of money for a small event that, that didn't generally get a ton of fans, but there sure were a lot of people out at Brown Deer Park that week.
I remember when he first got there, because he had just turned pro, he had no professional status. So when you have no professional status, you can't get in the pro-am. He needed to learn Brown Deer Park as quickly as he could. So I believe, technically, did he not stay amateur until after the pro-am and then turn professional so he could play in the pro-am as an amateur or something? Somehow he was able to finagle his way into the pro-am, which I thought was a hoot because he wasn't even the PGA Tour pro in the pro-am.
That's absolutely right, Rob. And a funny little story about that that day was, although he wasn't a pro yet, technically, on his way to the tee for the pro-am at 8:30 in the morning, I was following him. He had come from the range and he was walking to the first tee. I can't remember if they played off 1 or 10 in the pro-am, but he stopped under the trees by the 18th green there, and Fluff, his caddy at the time, came running out of the clubhouse with a brand new Titleist staff bag wrapped in plastic still. And with about five people watching, Tiger and Fluff ripped the plastic off the bag and took his clubs from, he had a Ping. I think it was a Stanford carry bag, but it was definitely a Ping bag, I remember. And they took his clubs from that Ping carry bag and put them in the Titleist staff bag. And there were like five people watching this. And I remember thinking this is sort of the symbolic moment where he's turning professional, even though technically he played that day as an amateur, you're right, in the pro-am.
And then to put a bow on our Tiger talk, T68, I believe, was his finish that week. He made the cut and then makes the unforgettable hole in one on Saturday. And then after that, it was kind of like, you know, maybe he hit the wall. That was quite a week for a kid that was, what, you know, 20 years old, I think, at the time.
You know, I talked to Tom about that hole in one, and Tom said he was on the other side of the course, far away from the 14th hole as could be, when he heard this tremendous roar. And he said, I knew, kind of like the Masters, when you hear a roar and you know what's going on, he said, I knew it could be nothing other than Tiger making a hole in one on 14. But I always thought it was the third round, Rob, but I just looked in the GMO media book and it says fourth round.
Really?
Is that a mistake? I always thought it was the third round.
I guess it was the third round too. We're going to have to go back in our newspaper.com archives and look that up.
Yeah.
I was pretty sure it was, you know, Saturday, everyone kind of breathed a sigh of relief that he made the cut. And, you know, everything after that was kind of gravy. And of course, that's the year that a Wisconsin golfer came the closest to winning the GMO, with Jerry Kelly losing in the playoff to Lauren Roberts. And I believe Steve Stricker finished in the top five that year. It obviously is the greatest GMO ever, probably the greatest golf event ever played outside of the majors in Wisconsin. And it provided us with a lot to write about that week.
Yeah. I remember the buzz and the electricity, especially around the first tee. I was there when, and you probably were, when Tiger hit his first shot on Thursday. And I remember the gallery being, you know, five or six deep around the tee, and going all the way down the gallery rope on the fairway, along the fairway. And I'd never seen that at the GMO. We had never seen that previously and would never see it again. Actually, the tournament, it wound up not drawing a lot of people in its last few years, and unfortunately went under in 2009. But yeah, that was a watershed moment in golf history in Wisconsin. I think it's pretty cool the fact that Tiger Woods turned pro in Milwaukee, Lorena Ochoa turned pro in Milwaukee at a Symetra Tour event that then called the Futures Tour, and Grace Park turned pro in Milwaukee in a Futures Tour event. Wow. I think that's pretty cool. And Tony Finau made his PGA Tour debut as a 17-year-old in the GMO. So a lot of bragging rights there for Brown Deer Park and Milwaukee.
And we'll talk more about Tony Finau, because he may be coming back. He will be coming back to Wisconsin here in a month's time at the Ryder Cup after winning the first PGA Tour playoff event on Monday. But before we get to the Ryder Cup report, Gary, we need to talk a little college golf firing up. We'll touch on it a little bit this week and pick it up more again next week. But you've got a story that posted today on the new Badgers golf coach for men, Mike Wilson. I guess, to summarize, he's very confident about his ability to or his hopes to turn the UW into an elite golf program.
Yeah. And it might take a couple of years, Rob. He's got the roster he's got, and he can't do much about it. There are some good players on that roster, as you and I both know, with Cameron Huss and Griffin Barella, who've had really good summers. And he's got a good freshman coming in, and Jacob Beckman. So there's definitely some talent to work with, but his scholarship money is tied up for a couple more years. So it's not going to be till, you know, 23, 24, those classes start coming in when we see what kind of player he recruits and how much better the program can get. But very impressed with him. You know, he's had success wherever he's been. Two-time coach of the year in his conference when he was at Charleston Southern, and then two-time coach of the year at UAB. He got UAB, you know, a mid-major to the NCAA championships a year ago or earlier this year, and was ranked as high as fifth in the nation at one point there. So he's had a lot of success. He knows how to run a golf program. It's obvious. And I'm excited to see what he does at University Ridge with those guys and in Madison.
I was just going through the roster today that we posted with your story, and you know, Griffin Barella won the Colorado Amateur this year. You mentioned Jacob Beckman's had a really good run as one of the top juniors in the state of Wisconsin, following on the heels of Cam Huss out of Kenosha, who was seemingly in the hunt at every event we were at this summer. And that's a solid top three. Now it's trying to find that fourth score and a fifth and a sixth to push the back end of the lineup. And, you know, one kid that I met this summer at the Balance and Believe Invitational, Graham Moody out of Vancouver, Washington, the other freshman coming in, didn't realize he's a four-time Oregon Junior Amateur Champion and a two-time Player of the Year in that state. And And so he, you know, certainly has the potential to be a factor right away. There's a couple guys in the roster who haven't played. One, you know, Chip Savary out of Winnetka, Illinois, hasn't played at all in the three seasons he's been in the program, and he's still on the roster. So we don't know a lot about Chip. And then Cam Frazier out of Ohio was really highly thought of by former coach Michael Burson when he came in, that hasn't competed since the 2019-20 season. So you've got guys like that. And then, you know, guys that came back from injury last year, Robbie Morway was one of them, and really started to show signs of what he, you know, has, and a great team player. We saw him caddying for a teammate at the, for Cam Huss at the State Open. You know, and I think, you know, based on Mike Wilson's pedigree at UAB and Charleston Southern, he can take that, you know, that clay and mold it into something that will be at the very least competitive, I would think, in year one.
Yeah, and, you know, Rob, originally I was going to write that story. It's just a straight, you know, straight feature story about Mike and his and the program. But his answers were so good to some of the questions I asked that I decided to do it as a Q&A. And one of the things that really interested me was he's not hung up on length. He knows most of his guys that he's going to recruit are going to hit it long enough. He doesn't care. He doesn't necessarily want them to try to bash it out there 320 like we've talked about for a couple of years on this podcast and written about it. That's what all the young kids are taught to do coming up, is swing as fast as you can, hit it as far as you can, and go find it. He wants players who hit it in the fairway. He thinks that's very, very important in college golf, that to stay away from penalty strokes and guys playing out of hazards. And I think that's a little bit different philosophy than I've seen lately anyway, Rob.
Absolutely. It's been a grip it and rip it mindset all summer by the juniors. And I hope that edict and that message gets through to the young kids around Wisconsin, because that's what allowed Pearson Hunt to be on the verge of winning both the State Am and the State Open this year. He's a guy that thinks his way around the golf course, and I think that's been lost on the next generation, at least in large numbers like it was in the previous. And unique kids like Harrison Ott and Pearson Hunt and Hunter Eichhorn, you know, sure, they hit drivers and they hit them, they swing hard at them, but they also know when to dial it back. And I think that'll be interesting to see whether, you know, that message gets through, and whether, you know, certain individuals in the state of Wisconsin in the next few classes are able to step forward and you know, be available to, you know, a Badger program to the point where they could make an impact. Jack Blair is another guy too, out of Milwaukee Marquette, that I'm interested in. You know, he was a state runner up as a senior, and, you know, he's been quietly in the picture at the state AMs and the state opens, and he could also fill that 4 and 5 spot. That's what's next here on Talking.Golf. What's next, powered by @wis.golf live, our Twitter handle, where all the results go once they're posted to our website at wisconsin.golf. Give it a look at @wis.golf live. Give it a follow on Twitter. We wrap up Talking.Golf with the Ryder Cup report, and a lot to get to in a short time, because I promised Gary D'Amato we keep it under 40 minutes. And let's start first with the news. You were the first on this this summer when you talked to Steve Stricker around the AmFam Championship time about Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. Apparently now, and he said that it wasn't going to be a problem. He was going to talk to him. Apparently now he has talked to him. And he claims, Steve Stricker has, in an article in SI and on Morning Read, it's been put to bed. The feud has been put to bed as it relates to the Ryder Cup. Do you buy it, Gary D'Amato?
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure Steve, you know, he's not the confrontational type, but he is decisive, and he will be decisive as captain. And I'm sure when he talked to those guys, he just told them, look, I want you guys to stay off social media that week. You know, one ill-timed, unfortunate tweet could become the story of the matches, as I wrote about, and I think that's true. The Euros would certainly pounce on it, and it would be in all the tabloids all over Europe should those guys go at it in some form on social media. So I think they're going to be, I'm confident they're going to be professional, very professional that week. They're going to put aside whatever differences they have for the betterment of the team. And you know, they're both great players, as we see Bryson today shooting 60. So Brooks Koepka is, he just rises to the occasion in big events. So they need both of those guys concentrating on the golf course and not each other. That's for sure.
And I think maybe, Gary, just a little bit, they make each other better because they both want to outdo each other. After Bryson missed that 6-footer that would have given him a 59 today at the BMW, I think it was Kyle Porter of CBS Sports tweets out, I can't wait to see Brooks Koepka go out and shoot 58 tomorrow. I think, you know, but that's what's happened. I mean, it's just, you know, it's point, counterpoint, punch, counterpunch. I mean, it's, I think, great theater. Davis Love compared it yesterday when he was asked about it over at the Ally Challenge to Tiger and Phil, and of course, Jack and Arnie. I, you know, none of those guys really did their stuff over social media though. So it's a little bit different, but you know, I think it's great for the game. It gets people talking and everyone's waiting to see what's going to happen next.
Well, you're absolutely right, Rob. I'm talking to Andy North earlier this summer about guys not liking each other. And he said, there's been locker room problems forever on the PGA Tour. There's always been guys who don't like each other, but because of social media and because both these guys, especially Koepka, are very active on social media, it's blown up this way. But there's always been beefs in locker rooms. There's always, you know, Jack and Arnie later in life were very, very close friends. But when they were in their prime in the 60s, they didn't care for each other. And so this kind of thing has gone on forever. So it's nothing new in golf. It's just that there's a heightened awareness of it, I guess, because of the 24-hour news cycle and social media.
I just hope you and I are alive to see, you know, Bryson and Brooks later in life when they're sitting on rocking chairs outside of a Cracker Barrel, you know, hashing over their you know, the height of their rivalry. That'll be fun. Tony Finau wins over the weekend in a Monday finish because of weather out at Liberty National. I you know, you've seen Tony since that you know, the time that he qualified for the GMO, and we've kind of watched him somewhat grow up in front of our eyes, but in other ways he looks as young as he ever has. And now he finally has that you know, that monkey off his back, and that second PGA Tour win, and in some people's mind the first real one. I think the first one came in Puerto Rico, and it's a month before the Ryder Cup. Boy, talk about timing. He's number six on the points list. He's the only one this week who can be caught before that top six is finalized. I think it's a great, you know, it rounds out that unit there that Steve Stricker will add to with his six captain's picks.
Yeah, Tony's the kind of player that I think really will do well at Whistling Straits. You know, he's a bomber, but as we talked about, he's fairly straight for as long as he hits it. And he's got the kind of personality, I think, that he could pair with anybody. So that's the kind of guy you want to, you know, a very pleasant guy, easy to get to like and to be around. So that's the kind of guy Steve wants in his team room. So even if someone, one of those guys who could possibly catch him, does catch him and he slips to seventh, I mean, I think we can say for certain that he's on the team.
Well, Gary, we've got our hotel rooms for the Ryder Cup. I wish I could tell you it was the Haven Hilton, but it's got a door with a lock on it. So we won't tell people where we wound up staying, but wave to us on I-43 as we're going between Sheboygan and Green Bay.
Yeah, Rob, that's going to be so much fun. We've got a lot to do between now and then, a lot of advanced stories to write. You and I are both going to be busy, but I can't wait for the Ryder Cup. It's been a long time coming. They announced this, you know, well, they announced it actually in 2005, I believe, that Whistling Straits had gotten and Kohler had gotten a three-tournament package, the two PGAs in 10 and 15 and the Ryder Cup. So, and then with the COVID year postponement, man, this has just been, we've been waiting forever for this. So, and now we're just weeks away.
I had four kids who weren't teenagers when they announced it. Now they're all out of high school.
Yeah.
How long we've had to wait. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. And we'll, of course, talk more about the Ryder Cup next week on Talking.Golf and talk more about college golf with the season's opening coming up very quickly. Here is the Erin Hills Intercollegiate hosted by Marquette. And that's always a great one. And Gary's been at that one. So we'll kind of dive into that a little bit more. So, Gary, let me see here. My stopwatch says 38 minutes. I think that's we tried to keep it to 30. 38's not bad. We'll continue to make the Talking.Golf lean and mean in the future weeks. How's that sound?
That sounds good, Rob. We had a lot of good stuff to talk about today, so it's fine to go 8 minutes over.
That's right. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. Talking.Golf sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance, So get yours now and join Iron Jock Nation. Get it at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.